is the news.
Iran says diplomacy is the best way for settling differences between Tehran and Baku, reiterating its respect for the territorial integrity of all countries. Russia dismisses reports about its missiles having landed in Poland as, quote, a provocation intended to escalate tensions. And a US judge rules that the use of COVID controls to block the entry of asylum seekers was an arbitrary police policy that violated government procedures. Many thanks for joining us. Iran says the diplomatic channel is the best way to resolve misunderstandings with Azerbaijan. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the remarks during a phone conversation with his Azeri counterpart, Ceyhun Bayramov. He was referring to the recent comments by Azerbaijan's president about Azeri-speaking Iranians. Amir Abdollahian expressed discontent with the president's Ilham Aliyev's comments. He said respecting the sovereignty and territorial integrity of other countries must be a basic principle for any nation. For his part, Bayramov described as positive talks and contacts between Iranian and Azeri officials. He said Baku was ready to boost relations with Tehran in an effort to settle the differences. Iran's envoy to the UN says Israel is the main obstacle to a Middle East free of weapons of mass destruction, calling on the international community to assist the region in overcoming such an obstacle. Amir Saeed Iravani underlined that the Israeli regime is equipped with all types of these inhumane weapons. He lamented that Western states remain silent on Israel developing WMDs with the US's support. He was addressing a UN conference on the establishment of a Middle East zone free of nuclear weapons and other weapons of mass destruction. Israel is estimated to have 200 to 400 nuclear warheads in its arsenal. The regime has refused to either join the nuclear non-proliferation or allow inspections of its military nuclear facilities. The European Union has imposed fresh sanctions on Iran over its response to the recent riots in the country. An EU statement said 29 individuals and three organizations have been targeted over what it called Tehran's widespread use of force against peaceful protesters. Interior Minister Ahmad Vahidi, as well as several military and police officials, are on the sanctions list. Press TV is one of the three entities blacklisted. The sanctions include travel bans and asset freezes. Iran has strongly criticized the sanctions. It called the EU move unfounded, illegal, and meddlesome.
On Monday, the European Union announced new sanctions on a number of Iranian officials and three organizations, including Iran's 24-hour English news channel Press TV, for alleged crackdown on protests which began following the death of Mahsa Amini, a young Iranian woman who collapsed in police custody and was pronounced dead a few days later at hospital. The state broadcaster is accused of airing, quote, forced confessions of detainees, according to an EU statement. A baseless claim that has surprised Press TV staff and managers, as no such forced confessions have been produced or broadcast by the English-language news channel during the recent riots. On the contrary, the news channel has made a great effort to counter fake narratives fostered by Western media.
They make claims about Press TV producing and airing forced confessions. I've been working here at Press TV for almost a decade now, and I can tell you that Press TV has not aired any confessions whatsoever, forced or unforced. So that shows you how such decisions by the EU and the like are based on unfounded claims with no basis in reality. You know, I see this as part of their hybrid warfare against Iran. If you look at the big picture, you see them supporting terrorist groups. And these sanctions on Press TV, I see as part of the media war and their narrative control. They want to present the war with their distorted version of what's going on in Iran these days. And seemingly, they don't feel much comfortable with Press TV challenging their narrative. So they would try everything to silence us or make us less heard. But we're not going to be silenced.
Riots broke out in Iran in mid-September after the death of Mahsa Amini. Rioters brutally attacked security officers and caused massive damage to public property. Iran's intelligence ministry has revealed that the United States and the United Kingdom were directly involved in the unrest, adding that dozens of terrorists affiliated with the Israeli regime and anti-revolution groups have also been detained in the unrest. Experts believe that sanctions imposed on Press TV by the EU and earlier by the government of Canada are aimed at muzzling free speech and alternative views. And once again, the term human rights violations has turned into a tool for Western countries to advance their own agenda, as street riots in Iran don't seem to be achieving the goals they expected. Taking into consideration all the different aspects, Press TV is not discouraged by the unfair treatment and false accusations. Despite all obstacles, Press TV will continue to be the voice of the voiceless, reporting underreported stories and news overlooked by mainstream media. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
A large business delegation from Russia has visited Iran to explore areas of cooperation. This comes as the two countries are poised to boost their commercial ties amid U.S. sanctions that target both the nations, Yusuf Jalali reports.
When there's mutual trust, a deal is a deal. It's this easy to arrive at an agreement when the two sides of the bargain are from Russia and Iran. These B2B meetings come as part of an economic forum held in Tehran between Iranian businesses and over 100 companies from Russia.
We are a Russian logistic company, and we're here to participate in this business forum to find some partners for business with Iran. We are thinking to transport goods to Iran, from Iran, through Iran.
Our activity is about gas, oil, petrochemical equipment, machinery, instrument. We can export many items to Russian companies. For example, as the machinery, as raw material, and it can help both sides to develop their business relationship as soon as possible.
Tehran and Moscow's interests coincide on many fronts. Both are faced with U.S. sanctions, and both are signatories to the 2015 deal, which has faced troubles following the U.S. withdrawal from the pact in 2018 and the reinstatement of sanctions on Iran. While the bans have adversely affected the Russo-Iranian trade, businessmen here believe there's a strong will from both Tehran and Moscow to overcome those restrictions.
I don't think it will be like a very, very big problem for our countries. Just, we have a border, we have a Caspian Sea, and we can transport cargo. This sanction, it is some problem for the trading, for the money transferring, but it's okay for logistics, no problem.
The American measures have complicated the Russian-Iranian commercial ties when it comes to money transfer and banking transactions. While alternatives, such as the use of national currencies, have already paid off, legal experts attending this forum say they have a better way out. Cryptocurrency.
Using cryptocurrencies, Iran and Moscow can effectively ditch the U.S. dollar. So if the two sides include this transaction method in their contracts, they can proceed with their businesses seamlessly without any concern over the impacts of U.S. measures.
Visits between Iranian and Russian officials have in recent months increased, following the West tightening its economic measures against both countries. Tehran and Moscow are now eyeing a 20-year strategic partnership treaty that would lay out the roadmap for future expansion of ties at all levels, from politics to economy and security.
This year, Tehran and Russia traded some $4 billion worth of commodities, roughly 90% up compared to last year's trade volume. Now, given the growing relationship between the two sides, the Iran-Russia Chamber of Commerce predicts that this figure will hit $10 billion by 2024. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Nearly 10 months into the Russia-Ukraine war, Moscow accuses Kiev of failing to find any peaceful solutions to end the deadly conflict.
Countries are calling for a peaceful settlement, call for agreements to be made quickly. They know perfectly well that Ukraine is dragging out this process, that the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky banned at a legislative level, banned holding negotiations with Russia by his order. So it's not a question for us. And that is what I said today to French President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz during brief talks.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Ukraine is refusing to talk to Russia and has put forward what he called unrealistic conditions for peace. The top Russian diplomat also slammed the West for its approach toward the Russian offensive in Ukraine, accusing the United States and its allies of provoking the conflict. Lavrov said the West started the Ukraine war and had begun preparing for it many years before. The Russian military offensive in Ukraine began on February 24th. Russia has fired a barrage of missiles on several Ukrainian cities, causing widespread power outages and shutdowns. Authorities say more than 7 million homes are cut off from the electricity after 15 energy facilities across Ukraine were damaged by Russian strikes. Officials in the cities of Lviv and Kharkiv have also reported power outages. In the eastern Sumy region, officials announced electricity shutdowns, while in Rivne, in the West, officials said Russian strikes targeted energy infrastructure, resulting in outages. Ukrainian forces say Russia has fired around 100 missiles on the country. Moscow dismisses reports that Russian missiles landed in Poland, saying statements by Polish media are, quote, deliberate provocations aimed at escalating the situation. Russia's defense minister said the country's firepower has launched no strike at the area on the Ukrainian-Polish border. Warsaw says two people were killed in the attack. Poland's president said there was no clear evidence of who fired the missile, adding it was, quote, most probably Russian-made. NATO member Poland said it was considering activation of the alliance's Article 4, which means consultation of all members regarding the right of answer. Warsaw said it has also raised readiness of the combat unit. The Pentagon says it can't confirm Russian missiles struck inside Poland. NATO chief Jens Stoltenberg said it was important to find out the facts about what caused the deadly explosion. The Ukrainian president has accused Russia of striking Poland.
Firing missiles at NATO territory is a Russian attack on collective security. This is a very significant escalation. We must act. I want to say now to all our Polish brothers and sisters, free people will not be broken by terror.
Ukraine's Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba also called for NATO members to convene immediate summit for tough and principled measures against Moscow. He called for Ukraine to be provided with the modern aircraft needed. NATO envoys said they would hold an emergency meeting on Wednesday on Poland. In a tweet, EU chief Charles Michel said he was shocked by reports that a missile or other weaponry had killed people in Poland. Meanwhile, French President Emmanuel Macron called for talks to be held at the G20 summit over the perpetrated Russian attack. The G20 summit is now underway in Indonesia. EU defense ministers agreed to increase military spending by 70 billion euros during the next 3 years. It's a decision that's being lambasted, given the fact that the bloc's citizens are enduring a growing social crisis. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
In just the past 9 months, the EU and US have together pumped 32 billion euro worth of lethal weapons into Ukraine. At a meeting here in Brussels on Tuesday, EU defence ministers agreed to increase their military spending by a huge amount between now and the end of 2025.
70 billion euros.
Apparently, there is an urgent need to replace weapons being sent to Ukraine.
The supply of arms to Ukraine, it's a continuous flow. It flows every day. And every day there is a member state who provides more. The systems has already been provided. I don't think we need new systems. What they need is ammunition to make the systems work.
One expert we interviewed online told us it is a dangerous policy.
The problem with further funding is that it suggests further escalation. An escalation is hazardous because by intent or by miscalculation, it can lead all of the parties into a nuclear conflict.
Many peace activists and rights groups say the military spending is grotesque given the EU's growing social crisis. Those in the European Parliament who oppose NATO and are calling for peace talks between Russia and Ukraine are furious at attempts to silence them.
We talk about democracy, but where is this going to end up? Those you brand as populist and anti-European have a democratic right to disagree with you on the course that Europe is taking.
Defence ministers have agreed to establish camps in up to 20 EU nations that will be used to train Ukrainian soldiers. Some security analysts are suggesting long-standing, controversial ambitions to create an EU army within the EU have effectively been put on hold. And now the strategy is to create an EU army in Ukraine. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Spaniards are struggling with the cost of living crisis as official data shows food prices in the country posted a record rise in October. The data released by the National Statistics Institute show overall food prices climbed 15% from a year earlier, the biggest in decades globally. Food prices have also skyrocketed since the war in Ukraine, which is one of the top grain supplies of the world. An extreme drought and consecutive heat waves in Spain this year have also slashed agricultural output. The surging cost of food especially hits low-income families who spend a bigger chunk of their household budgets on groceries. A US federal judge has ruled that the government could no longer use a law provision used for COVID-19 controls to block the entry of asylum-seeking migrants. Judge Emmett Sullivan said the so-called Title 42 was, quote, arbitrary and capricious policy that violated government procedures. The ruling leaves the government with a few tools to block the entry of migrants at the southern border with Mexico. Hundreds of thousands have been blocked each month under the rule, Sullivan said, and ordered that the government must appeal to a higher court if it wants to overturn the ruling. Title 42 allows expulsion of persons who have recently been in the country where communicable disease is present. Well, those were the top stories for this hour. Many thanks for joining us.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. In April of this year, the British government announced a controversial plan to send illegal migrants entering the United Kingdom without a visa to Rwanda, a country in East Africa. However, a last-minute ruling from the European Court of Human Rights has stopped this operation for now. Human rights activists have warned that this British plan to transfer refugees to Rwanda will create an uncertain fate for them. And also, the asylum seekers have warned that they will commit suicide if this British plan is implemented. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has more for us. An internal safeguarding document has revealed that Britain's Home Office has warned that its Rwanda policy was causing a rise in the number of asylum seekers reporting feeling suicidal and vanishing from hotel accommodation. Labour peer Helena Kennedy, QC, has called the Home Office heartless for pursuing the policy despite officials knowing how much damage it was causing to people. The minutes of an internal Home Office safeguarding board on 27th of April 2022, 2 weeks after the former Home Secretary Priti Patel announced a Rwanda deal, show Home Office officials asking accommodation contractors, including those from Serco and Clear Springs, how asylum seekers were reacting to news about the deal. The contractors responded that they had seen an increase in asylum seekers threatening to harm themselves and that some had left hotel accommodation. The minutes obtained by the Scottish Refugee Council in a Freedom of Information response show one contractor saying, "It has certainly raised tensions within the service user population. There has been a steady trend of service users who are saying they could potentially harm themselves if they were facing the prospect of being deported to Rwanda." This was from all demographics of the group. Another added, "We have seen in recent days or so a definite increase in those that are leaving hotels saying they're going to live with family or just going absent from hotels." Doctors, lawyers and human rights campaigners have said repeatedly that the threat of being sent to Rwanda was seriously damaging the health of asylum seekers. Emma Jin, the director of the charity Medical Justice, said, "This freedom of information disclosure shows the Home Office's own contractors back up our medical evidence warning that there is an increased level of self-harm and suicide risk following the Rwanda policy announcements. Yet the Home Office seems to be carrying on regardless. It is heartless and most disturbing and makes one wonder if the Home Office has any limits as to what it is prepared to subject human beings to." According to a 21-year-old Syrian asylum seeker who spoke to The Guardian, the main topic of conversation in his hotel was how people would commit suicide if the Home Office forced them to board a flight to Rwanda. The young Syrian asylum seeker said, "I have seen many asylum seekers leave the hotels because of the Rwanda threat. In the hotel, we talked a lot about doing suicide here in the United Kingdom to avoid being sent to Rwanda. I'm in constant fear of both the present and the future. I do not know what my fate will be, and this instability haunts me and haunts every asylum seeker in the United Kingdom." The website Info Migrants has also covered the same story. Medical evidence in a report shows that the risk of suicide among asylum seekers in Britain has risen ever since the policy of sending them to Rwanda was first floated earlier in 2022. British charity Medical Justice published an analysis looking at mental state of 36 asylum seekers who had arrived in Britain recently and were held in immigration detention centres where they faced the threat of being sent to Rwanda. The report, titled "Who's Paying the Price? The Human Cost of the Rwanda Removals," found that 11 of the 36 asylum seekers interviewed had suicidal thoughts and that one had attempted suicide twice before. The clinicians who wrote the paper found that the risk of committing suicide had been exacerbated for some of the asylum seekers by the prospect of facing potential removal to Rwanda. The report said some individuals were clinically considered to be at high risk of suicide if they are threatened with removal to Rwanda. The report added that the threat of deportation to Rwanda had compounded existing mental health problems, which are often found with migrants and refugees travelling long distances under precarious conditions. Of the 36 asylum seekers surveyed, 26 showed signs of having been tortured before they arrived in Britain. 15 reportedly displayed evidence of post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, and 6 appeared to have suffered trafficking conditions. The latter was not narrowly defined in the report, but ordinarily implies that individuals are forced to perform things against their will during migratory circumstances. The despair of asylum seekers reaching the United Kingdom only to find out that they may be shipped off to Rwanda was also highlighted in a video created by a 40-year-old Yemeni asylum seeker earlier this year. After arriving in Britain in April and learning about the Rwanda policy, he addressed former Prime Minister Boris Johnson and former Home Secretary Priti Patel in the video clip, saying he was left with no other choice but to kill himself. Website eachother.org.uk has also covered the same story. According to the Home Office, a key objective of this plan is to send asylum seekers entering the United Kingdom without a visa to Rwanda. It's to put a stop to dangerous channel crossings by disrupting the business model of smugglers. Former Home Secretary Priti Patel claimed the policy will save lives. Former Immigration Minister Brandon Lewis claimed the scheme was the humanitarian thing to do. Meanwhile, the plan has been criticised by refugee human rights advocates as headline-grabbing cruelty. The British government's first attempt to send asylum seekers to Rwanda under this policy failed because of a last-minute ruling from the European Court of Human Rights, which held that the removal of one claimant should be halted until Britain's domestic courts had the opportunity to consider whether, if sent to Rwanda, the claimant would suffer treatment contrary to his human rights. The flight was halted just minutes before takeoff, but the government has since said it remains committed to the Rwanda policy. Asylum seekers will undergo an initial screening for vulnerabilities before being removed from the United Kingdom. However, barrister Miranda Green has highlighted concerns with this approach. Miranda Green said, given the well-recognised shortcomings of such Home Office screenings, including the widespread failures to identify serious mental and physical health problems, as well as trafficking victims and torture survivors, there are serious questions about how effective this expedited system will be. The charities Detention Action and Care for Calais, along with the Public and Commercial Services Union, which represents some of the Home Office staff tasked with carrying out the policy, launched a legal challenge against the Home Office over the plan. They argue that the former Home Secretary Priti Patel has failed in her duty of transparency by refusing to make public the criteria used to assess a claimant's eligibility for removal to Rwanda. The charities claim the plan is unlawful, given that it penalises asylum seekers on the grounds of their irregular entry, which contravenes the 1951 Refugee Convention. On top of this, British officials have raised concerns over Rwanda's human rights record.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends, and let us start the day by contemplating upon what the leader of the pious, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, has said about the vicissitudes of life. The consequence of fear is disappointment, and of bashfulness is frustration. Opportunity passes away like the cloud. Therefore, make use of good opportunities.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, pleasure and perfection. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone, you're listening to A to Z program from the IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And in today's lesson, we're talking about the pleasure and perfection. Instances of pleasure can be found in a way that we don't get to see any multiplicity in them. For example, in the case of Almighty Allah, it could be said that enjoyment emanates from Him. Even though in this case, the bihjat, the interpretation, is more befitting as some scholars have remarked. In the same manner, with regard to man, it could be said that he takes pleasure from his own being, as his own being is dearer than anything else for him. For example, to gain knowledge, the presence of the scholar, the object of learning, and the trait of having knowledge is required, but its interpretative meaning also applies to the soul's speculative knowledge of itself, or even Almighty Allah's knowledge of Himself. Even though, in these cases, there is no multiplicity among knowledge. Now, the scholar and the object of learning likewise, the common meaning of affection requires the presence of the lover, the beloved, and the state of love, but no such external plurality exists in the case of self-love. So, in this case, in other words, all other pleasures serve as a reflection of his self-enjoyment because they have emerged in the process of reaching a face and perfection in his being.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program. We are talking about pleasure and perfection. Now, as we're talking about pleasure and perfection, we're looking at it from the perspective of the human being. That the human being always struggles, always strives to go towards what is pleasurable for him, and he is always trying hard to stay away from the pains and agonies of the life, pains and agonies that he meets in his life. Now, let's talk about the failure to derive pleasure in normal condition. We're saying that the failure to derive pleasure in normal conditions is due to inattention. Whenever man can pay full attention to himself and ignore aught else by the help of external factors, such as great dangers, exercises, and concentration, he will derive exceptional pleasure. For example, if a person is sentenced to death and considers the verdict binding, he will derive an unparalleled enjoyment when he later realizes that the verdict has been annulled. the verdict has been nullified. Of course, in this example, pleasure is related to being brought back to worldly life after being disappointed at it. Yes, it is good. It is a good example. Yes, it is a good example for our discussion as it elucidates man's love for life and his enjoyment of himself. This discussion, we get an outcome, and that is the pleasure experienced by man is either derived from his own being or his own perfection or from other beings which he is in need of and is somehow related to. Thus, he will reach the most sublime status of pleasure if he can see himself tied to one who embraces all connections and links and who makes man needless of any other dependence. If he finds his own being linked to him and sees no independence for himself, he will take the pleasure of independence from himself. Thank you so much for following up on this. Until next episode, inshallah, we're going to meet together. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Chinese aerobatic teams have been performing jaw-dropping stunts to mark the 73rd anniversary of the People's Liberation Army Air Force. Pilots wowed the audience with their complicated maneuvers, such as swooping close to the ground, making loops and rolls. Aerobatic teams use red, yellow and blue smoke trails representing the flag of the Chinese Air Force. The Hong Ying aerobatic team, also known as the Red Eagle, is made up of 10 JL-8 trainer planes and 20 pilots from the Air Force Aviation University. The performance was part of China's International Aviation and Aerospace Exhibition held in southern China. The exhibit typically draws thousands of participants in the field of aviation from countries all over the world.
Iran has unveiled the new jersey for its national football team for the upcoming 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar. The new sports attire was showcased during a special ceremony in the capital, Tehran. The event was attended by some of the biggest names in Iran's soccer federation and included a series of entertaining performances. One objective of the ceremony was to see off the national soccer team, who will be making the trip to Qatar in less than a week. The jersey has been created by an Iranian sportswear designer who designed official jerseys for several Iranian sports teams taking part in international competitions. The heavily anticipated World Cup tournament will kick off on the 20th of November. Usually, rats are associated with garbage and disease, but these rats are not the typical rodents. They are being trained in Tanzania for search and rescue operations. These are a breed called the African giant pouch rat, which is naturally a very curious creature. It can weigh up to around 1,500 grams and are known to have longer lifespans than other rats. Lead researcher at the Belgium-based non-profit company Apopo, Don O'Keen, says this species can live up to 10 years. This means that even after the 9 months of training, the rat will still have a long working career ahead. The size and agility of rats make them invaluable for search and rescue efforts.
So this is where the idea for the rats came in, because the rats are just as trainable as dogs. They've got a great sense of smell, and their small size and natural agility should hopefully make them really good in this scenario, where they could squeeze in small spaces and get closer to any victims.
The rescue rats began training in August last year at the Apopos Training and Research Center. The rodents are fitted with tiny backpacks that enable real-time wireless audio-visual communication. When they find a potential victim, they pull a small handle hanging around their neck to let the rescue handlers know. The rats were trained to locate humans in mock disaster zones, such as aftermath of earthquakes. Apopo has already trained rats to detect landmines and sniff out tuberculosis. So much joy can be found in a bottle of luxury perfume, but parting with hundreds of dollars for such scents, I can take the shine off that experience. Now in Syria, a perfumer is helping people smell expensive without digging too deep into their pockets. One whiff of a fragrance is all a Syrian perfumer needs to recreate the scents of luxury brands for a fraction of a cost. That's very welcome in a country ravaged by years of foreign-backed militancy. Dozens of customers flock daily to his tiny store nestled in the historic bazaar of Damascus. They flash photos on their phones of high-end perfumes they want to replicate. He says all he has is his nose.
Here lies the secret of the profession and the brain power. I started training my nose to smell perfumes since I was 15 years old. I do not own high-end equipment. All I have is my nose, my brain power and expertise. That's all.
In the war-torn country, many people struggle to afford life's bare necessities, let alone perfume. With the local currency losing much of its value, Syrian employees reportedly make roughly $25 a month, on average a quarter of the price of a bottle of imported perfume. This perfumer sells his fragrances for about $6, drawing in a flow of clients from all walks of life.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Some people believe the internet will soon make paper books a thing of the past. In Iraq, book lovers are fighting back. They have launched a book festival offering thousands of free books to encourage the Arab nation to read more. The festival is called Iraq Reads. It's attracted big crowds. Iraqis stood shoulder to shoulder behind long tables covered in books and flipped through hundreds of titles to find the one catching their interest. Some others gather on next to the stands to read under a tree, chat about their newest books, or listen to extracts of literature read aloud through a loudspeaker. One of the organizers says they aim to revive the culture of reading books, reading paper books.
It's a crisis all over the world, not only in Iraq. There is a crisis in terms of reading paper books. One of the goals for our festival is to revive the reading of paper books so that the electronic book does not become an alternative of the paper book.
As part of the festival, 70,000 books have been distributed for free across the country so far. The books covering a wide range of topics were donated by partner libraries. The festival is held in 7 provinces in the Arab country. You have probably seen penny farthings in old books and cartoons, the antique bicycle with one very large and one small wheel. Now, this peculiar bike actually brings fans together in Prague each year to show off their skills. The cyclists were all dressed in historical costumes as they rode in formation at Letno Park in Prague. The traditional one-mile race competition was also held to see who could go the fastest while keeping their balance. The riders, mostly elderly men, said they came there for just the fun of it. Penny farthings were invented around 1870 and were popular until models with two evenly sized wheels and chains were developed. Most bicycles today are based on this design. Egypt is marking 100 years since the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun, a pharaoh who ruled more than 1,300 years B.C.
I was fascinated with the story myself, and every morning in which I was here to pick up our inspector when I was working on a dig in the Valley of the Kings, I would wander around the house trying to imagine what it was like if I had been here in 1922 and could have been a part of that. And now here we are, now that it's restored, I do hope that this will turn into a center of cultural interest for anyone and everyone who wants to visit Egypt and wants to hear more of the story about Howard Carter and the king.
In 1922, British Egyptologist Howard Carter and his team discovered Tutankhamun's nearly intact tomb. That was the start of what became a 10-year project to excavate and conserve more than 5,000 unique artifacts. Tutankhamun's reign lasted barely 9 years in the vast span of ancient Egyptian history. Although his successors tried to erase the king's record from history, the valuable discovery of his tomb has immortalized the boy king.
China is taking the final step in the construction of its Tiangong space station, the second permanently inhabited station in low Earth orbit after NASA's International Space Station. The second and last lap component of the station was launched on Monday. The uncrewed module is called Mengtian, which means dreaming of the heavens. The rocket carrying it blasted off from China's Space Launch Center on the coast of the southern island province of Hainan. The 23-ton Mengtian is an advanced lab and does not have space for sleeping and sanitation. Instead, it has more space to carry payloads for scientific studies. Fan Ping is the chief designer of the project. She says this is a special step towards space research.
I think the Mengtian lab module is quite special, as it is for experiment only, which can be seen as a dedicated studio. There are 13 scientific experiment racks in the module and 37 exposed loading stations outside the module, enabling astronauts to do more extravehicular loading experiments in the future.
The Mengtian module is the last building block of the T-shaped Tiangong station. It has to fly 400 kilometers to join the two-module combination already dispatched into space. Together, the three modules will construct the station, which is designed for a lifespan of at least 10 years.
It's always a tricky task to remember people's names at a party, but not in this particular gathering in Tokyo, where all the guests had the exact same name, Hirokazu Tanaka. 178 Hirokazu Tanakas came together on Saturday to set a new namesake gathering world record. Their ages spanned from 3 years old to 80. The Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people with the same first and last name previously belonged to Martha Stewart. 164 people with that name came together in New York in 2005. In the Tanaka's gathering, every man was assigned an alias inspired by their hobbies, occupation, or favorite foods to tell them apart from others. One nicknamed by his birthplace says it's strange to meet so many people with the same name, obviously.
It's a strange feeling to know that there are nearly 200 people with the same name. To be honest, I'd presume there are more popular names out there like Suzuki and Sato. This achievement is really because of the efforts of our organizer.
The man who organized this gathering is a 53-year-old Hirokazu Tanaka who has worked for years to make this happen. He says his quest began in 1994 when he stumbled upon news about a baseball prodigy with the same name. After that, he began tirelessly scouring the nation for his namesakes. He then founded the Hirokazu Tanaka campaign that brought the men together and created a strange friendship among them. Thousands of baby turtles have been released into Peru's Amazon basin in an attempt to preserve the rainforest ecosystem. More than 6,000 hatchlings of three endangered species of turtles have been released into lakes and lagoons in Peru to help them repopulate. To make this happen, wildlife officials collected the eggs from their natural habitat and transferred them to artificial beaches until they hatched. The river turtles are considered vulnerable because for many years they have been killed for human consumption or kept as pets. Scientists are currently trying to conserve the Amazon to avoid catastrophic climate change, and Peru has the second largest share of the rainforest after Brazil.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Yemen's Ansar La resistance movement slammed the Saudi-led coalition for failing to renew the United Nations brokered ceasefire deal amid deteriorating humanitarian crisis in the impoverished Arab country. The movement said the coalition of aggression is responsible for the failures to extend the truce deal and worsening humanitarian conditions. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Yemen's Al Masira News Network reports that the leader of Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement demanded an end to the Saudi-led war on his country, calling on the Yemeni nation to continue to resist the Saudi aggression, which has been supported by the United States of America and the Israeli regime. In a recent speech to mark the birth anniversary of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, Abdul Malik al-Houthi urged the war coalition to stop the aggression, to lift the siege on Yemen, and to end the occupation of the country. He also called on Ardia people to continue confronting the aggression as long as it continues. Elsewhere in his remarks, Abdul Malik al-Houthi said the United States and the Israeli regime, as well as their acolytes, seek to enslave nations. He said the United States and Israel have directed all their endeavors towards bringing people out of light and into darkness. Tens of thousands of Yemenis flocked recently to the squares in the capital, Sana'a, and other cities to celebrate the Holy Prophet of Islam's birthday anniversary. The participants urged Muslims across the world to stand against Western imperialism. They held banners against the United States and Israel, which have supported the Saudi-led military aggression against their country. The rallies came just a few days after a United Nations brokered truce arrangement between the Ansarullah movement and the coalition came to an end. The truce first came into effect on 2nd of April for an initial two-month period and was extended twice until 2nd of October. Saudi Arabia and its allies, most notably the United Arab Emirates, have been waging a war against Yemen since March of 2015, trying in vain to reinstall the exiled regime of Abdurrahb Mansour Hadi. The military campaign, which has been enjoying unstinting arms, logistical and political support from the United States, has killed hundreds of thousands of Yemenis and turned the entire country into the scene of the world's worst humanitarian disaster. In recent months, Yemeni officials have issued stern warnings to the Israeli regime about its role in supporting the Saudi war in Yemen. In a warning to the Saudi-led coalition and the countries supporting it, Yemen's defense minister said recently that the country's armed forces are capable of hitting targets far beyond Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Yemen's defense minister, Major General Mohammed Al-Atifi, said, "We will never hesitate to bombard very sensitive and important facilities, and we will include them in the list of our future targets." Fast News Agency explains more about the same story. Yemen's Ansarullah Popular Resistance Movement said a Saudi-led coalition, which has been attacking the country since 2015, is entirely responsible for the failure of a United Nations brokered truce arrangement between Sana'a and the aggressors. Spokesman Mohammed Abdel Salam made the remarks in a tweet on Thursday, 13th of October, saying the ceasefire ended and was not extended due to the aggressor country's disregard for humanitarian demands and natural rights of the Yemeni people. The United Nations mediated truce arrangement expired on 2nd of October amid the invading coalition's constant violations of the agreement and its refusal to properly lift the siege that it has been enforcing against Yemen simultaneously with the war. Mohammed Abdel Salam also named some of the obstacles that the coalition has been throwing in the way of truce's extension. He said the coalition had refused to reopen the Sana'a International Airport and Yemen's lifeline, Al-Hudaydah, the port of Al-Hudaydah, and denied that the government in Sana'a access to the country's oil and gas wealth so it can pay the Yemeni people's salaries. The spokesman noted, "Peace in Yemen is not possible unless the invading countries abandon their arrogant mentality." Meanwhile, the Yemeni foreign minister said there will be no talks about extension of the United Nations brokered truce arrangement until the nation's legitimate demands are fully met, stressing that the Sana'a-based National Salvation Government will make every effort to establish just and dignified peace throughout the war-torn country. Hisham Sharaf made the remark at a meeting with the Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations for Humanitarian Affairs and Deputy Emergency Relief Coordinator in the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Joyce Masuya. The meeting took place in Sana'a, the Yemeni capital, recently. The Yemeni Foreign Minister, Hisham Sharaf, emphasized that the only solution to offset the adverse consequences of the ongoing humanitarian disaster in Yemen is to immediately stop the Saudi-led aggression, to lift the sanctions against Yemen, and end any kind of foreign military presence on Yemeni soil. Al-Mayadeen television network covers the same story from a different angle. A senior member of Yemen's popular Ansar Allah resistance movement warned the country's armed forces will target oil facilities deep inside Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates in case the Yemeni people's rights are not fulfilled. Recently,